We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Do not text and drive. Message and data rates apply. Good luck during the 1K contract, the national contest powered by Legacy Roofing Services, Ohio's premier roofing company. Joining us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, I was listening to Mike Farron today on his show, Power Alley, on MLB Radio, talk about lineup construction, Jonathan. And he was talking about the top, you know, what you just take your top five hitters, you put them in the top five spots, doesn't really matter what order, you figure it out from there. And the first thing I thought of, well, the Indians don't have five good hitters, Mike. The Indians don't even have, I mean, they're batting Jordan Luplow and Ben Gamel in the leadoff spot, for crying out loud. They don't have five good hitters.
Well, I didn't say that you had to have five good hitters. I said you had to have your five best hitters.
Well,
mileage may vary.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think we pick them out of, like, Ramirez is one, Rosario's two, Hernandez three, Franmil Reyes four, and then I guess I pick out of a hat for who's five. Who would you say is five?
I guess. I mean, I'm trying to think. Like, Jimenez should hit down in the order. You're not going to get any offensive production out of catcher, most likely. Although Roberto Perez might
hit some homers,
a little bit of power, but. Yeah. You know, I think part of the problem is that there's not, like, a really good answer at first base right now. So,
right.
I mean, I think Naylor is a guy that could be a top half of the lineup hitter. You know, I know there were a lot of guys in San Diego that felt like he was the player that they were going to miss the most in that trade because they felt like he was just starting to get it offensively at the big league level. And I know he had, you know, two awesome playoff games against the Yankees, which we can,
right.
you know, either chalk up to, hey, he was hitting the best pitching, or, well, it's a small sample size, or probably a little bit of both, but maybe Naylor. I mean, I get what they're doing at the top of the lineup. Like, Luplow's destroyed lefties for his career, and Gamel at least has a little bit of an idea of the strike zone. So, like, I get it, but you're right. It's not the deepest offense in the league, for sure.
No. Mike, you know, there's a lot of frustration from fans because the Indians have been so close, right? They've been in the playoffs a bunch
yeah.
of times. They have a great front office. They have a great manager. And we understand all teams were affected by COVID, but they have cut what had been a reasonable payroll for a number of years. Last year they cut it down, and now it's just been shredded. And with another trade of a superstar, whether in the long run it turns out to be good or not, it's hard for fans to get behind any of their star players when they feel like they're always going to be gone.
I completely understand. And I think it's one of the real downsides to a lot of the more progressive front offices, at least in terms of when it's come to player evaluation, is that, they've bought into this self-fulfilling prophecy that player X can't take up more than, you know, whatever percentage of your payroll is, you know, whoever your best player is, in order to field a competitive team. And I get where they're coming from on it because, you know, it costs money to be able to build veteran depth, and as players, you know, get it together or as they grow together, you know, they start to get more expensive through the arbitration process. But, you know, like the fact that Francisco Lindor got traded is still, to me, of all the moves that the Indians have made in the last 20 years in terms of who they've dealt away, to me, it's the one that hurts the most. And I'm not even a Cleveland fan.
Yeah.
I just, like, I don't understand, like, how you can't find a way to make it work with a star player who wants to be there, you know? And
yep.
I think a lot of that falls on ownership's shoulders. And, you know, listen, like, this isn't for the meek. I get that everybody wants to run a zero balance sheet every year, but, you know, when we're talking about losses, we're talking about lost revenue. we're not necessarily talking about a team operating in the red. Now, they might be, and they might be to significant numbers. We don't know. But for right now, I get it. I would be as frustrated as you are, as anybody who's a Cleveland fan would be, just by the fact that Lindor's not there anymore. And it would be very difficult for, based on what you've seen the first week of the season, to get over that.
Yeah, and Mike, I've given the Indians a lot of credit for being one of those teams we'd put in the category of team never tank, right? Haven't had a last place finish since 1991. They're one of six teams that you're really every year in, year out. They never really go full tank mode. Cardinals, Yankees, Dodgers, Angels, Mets. Like, they might be at the lower part of the division at times, but they're never completely rebuilding. Is it possible if, let's say, they got rid of Jose Ramirez, traded away some of the pieces that actually cost even the few pennies that they're willing to spend on this roster, with the development they have, though, with the arms they have, is it possible for them to still be in that team never tank category, or do they at one point have to repivot and maybe think that philosophy?
No, I mean, I think the thing that's kind of behind it is that they have a pretty strong farm system. And, you're right in the sense that they've been really remarkable in terms of taking guys who may not have been the sexiest picks out of the draft and improving them. And we've seen more and more teams, I think they were ahead of the curve in identifying that being able to have a pitcher who you had who could put the ball where you wanted it to was more important than velocity, because there are better tools available to, for lack of a better word, teach velocity for pitchers now. And I think that's what you've seen with most of Cleveland's staff. Really, these guys throw pretty hard, with the exception maybe of Savali. So I think they're well ahead on that. They have a number of really good position player prospects, and most of them play in the middle of the field, which is great because, if the bat plays and the glove doesn't, you can move to a corner. Or nobody's ever had too many shortstops in a position in the minor leagues that they can hit. Yeah. Those are really attractive trade chips. So I don't view them, even if they were to, move other players, eventually, as to going down that road. I don't think that's something that's going to end up happening. Frankly, I don't think that's the mindset of that front office. I don't think Chris Antonetti is interested in a full-blown rebuild. I don't think Mike Chernoff is. I think it's antithetical to their desire to compete. It's just that when you go through the down phases, the light at the end of the tunnel is difficult to see when you're drafting in the middle of the first round and you're just more middle of the pack than you are at the very bottom. But at least middle of the pack gives you a chance to win most nights, and sometimes, middle of the pack teams are ones that surprise over the course of a full season.
We're talking with Mike Farron, MLB Radio, Diamondbacks Radio. And Mike, I wanted to talk about what happened yesterday in that Mets Marlins game, because it drives me crazy. Replay, like, baseball is the easiest sport to replay. We yell about football all the time and all how they screw up replay. But I don't know why it shouldn't. It should be simple. If you can make an obvious call that's incorrect, correct with replay, you should be able to do it. Michael Conforto is not the one who should be getting crushed today. It's the umpire and it's baseball for not being able to correct that call, in my opinion. What say you on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have an issue with the way replay was handled, because, you start to identify these, the strike zone's subjective always, right? So,
sure.
Whether it's a strike or not is a question. And what is intent? There are plenty of guys that when they throw their kind of right, their lead elbow out. So can you really determine intent from that? I think you have to do that in the moment. I don't think that there actually was a replay fix for it. I think when the umpires got together on the field, if Ron Culpa had said, "Hey guys, bail me out, that pitch was a strike," like, can you say that he didn't try to get out of the way of it and change it that way? That may have been the way to do it, because the umpires did get together.
Right.
But, it's just like, listen, we're not going to get every call right. It was a big mistake. I appreciate the fact that Ron Culpa owned up to it afterwards. I mean, that doesn't make the Marlins feel any better. But, at least he was willing to admit that he was wrong in the way that he applied the rule or interpreted the situation. And, now, I think that's the best you can do. We're trying to get more calls right. We're not trying to be perfect. And I think that that's where we run into some of the disconnect when it comes to replay.
Well, not trying to be perfect. Let's go to Trevor Bauer for a second, because I am seeing some people come to his defense. I am seeing other people just say he's just a headache and everything that I don't know why chaos just follows Trevor Bauer the way that it does. But I kind of defended him a little bit. And let me explain why, Mike, because we were talking last segment, and like Trevor Bauer at one point realized a lot of the league was manipulating the baseball for spin rate. And so then he went ahead and started manipulating the baseball to prove a point, right? Because he's annoying and he has to do it that way. I understand it. I get it, right? Can he then in turn get in trouble for this type of thing? Like last night, or yesterday, excuse me, felt like it was Major League Baseball almost picking on Trevor Bauer and then instigating and poking the bear because they knew it would draw some attention.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning of this, because what happened was Wednesday afternoon, one of the A's beat writers noticed that a ball that Bauer had thrown was taken out of play. That's where it started. And I don't know if it was Alex Coffey, who's the A's beat writer for The Athletic, or if it was just another beat writer. I don't remember who did it. But I would almost guarantee you that what happened was that was discussed a little bit in the press box. The staff got on their internal Slack channel and was like, hey, Ken, this is interesting. Should check it out. And so Ken Rosenthal went to MLB and got confirmation on it. Nobody else has noticed it happening. So are people more on alert because it's Bauer, because he is such a polarizing figure? Or was it one of those things that somebody noticed that now gets blown up because it's Bauer? I don't think the league is necessarily pointing at Trevor Bauer and making him the poster child. The other part of the explanation when it comes to, you know, whether or not he was using a foreign substance to create spin or greater spin, you know, that's been a big discussion point with him, because he said in a Real Sports interview 3 years ago that you couldn't do it without making some sort of using some sort of substance, because they'd done a lot of work on it at Driveline and found out that was the case. But what nobody, I don't think, has asked in the interim is, well, Bauer had one start where everything ticked up, where it was pretty clear that he was making a point. The next year is when things started to really change. He also made a pretty significant mechanical change in that he's one of those guys that's a little like Lucas Giolito now, where instead of taking the big arm swing in the back, it's much shorter. And Giolito's a good example of a guy who did that and saw his spin rate increase. And I think if you look at, you know, I'm going to see Tyler Molly tonight for the Reds. He's another guy that shortened things up, added velocity, spin rate increases. Guys who add velocity, it's easier to maintain a high spin rate at higher velocity. So there's some of that, too. So I'm not trying to defend Bauer here, because I do find a lot of his act pretty tired. But I'm not entirely sure that there should just be this anticipation that he was marking the ball or using some sort of tack to create these right away. I don't think we have enough evidence outside of what he said in a Real Sports article 3 years ago, but before Driveline started making some adjustments in the way that they were helping guys improve. And to be honest, I haven't asked Driveline about it, so maybe I'm part of the problem in this. But I think that there's a fair amount of anecdotal evidence that would at least make it a valid claim, if not a true one.
We're talking with Mike Farron, MLB Radio. Mike, I'm curious. You know, in my fantasy baseball league this year, I ignored starting pitcher.
Nobody cares about your fantasy.
No, I know nobody cares, but I'm only bringing it up as an example to take me into this question about real baseball. You're right. You're 100% right. Nobody cares. But I went with a strategy of no starting pitchers. I didn't draft a single starting pitcher. I've got closers, and I've got high leverage relievers who could be closers who get a lot of strikeouts and don't give up base runners. And, you know, we've seen a little of this, obviously, with the Rays, especially a couple of years ago. They were doing more openers. Do you think we might get to a point, especially with the roster expanded to 26, the ability with the 10-day DL to move guys up and down real quick, where we will see a team just say, hey, I could spend all my money on offense, I could sign a bunch of relief pitchers for $4, $5, $6 million, and if I get 10, 12 really good relief pitchers, I could just win that way. Is that possible? And will somebody try it?
You mean like the old thing Tony La Russa tried, where he just threw everybody for three innings at a time when he was in Oakland and had a bad team?
Did he actually try that? Did they do that for the whole season?
I don't think it was for the whole season. But there was a good stretch of a couple months, I want to say, after the All-Star break in 87, maybe?
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, I can't remember the year, but there was a time that he did it.
Right.
Well, there's a couple things at play here. One, part of the reason why we still might be facing this is that you're right. The 10-day IL is still in account for pitchers this year, as is the expanded roster. But if we had been playing under more normal circumstances the last 2 years, we would have had a limit on pitchers on the roster at 13, which I think is still high. Mm-hmm. And there also would have been a difference in the amount of time that pitchers could be placed on the injured list or optioned than there would be for position players. It was 15 days for them and not 10.
Okay.
So I think once we get back more to normal rules in 2022, I think you might see a little bit less of that philosophy. I do think that one of the things that the league is concerned about is the fact that starters just don't go deep in games anymore because they're, you know, for front offices, in an effort to try and prevent runs, have seen the third time through the order penalty, which is that, you know, a third time through, a pitcher tends to get hit harder than they do in the previous two, which, you know, makes sense. The more hitters see them, the more they're going to get comfortable. That they've seen it as a bug and not a feature. And I think trying to find things and listening to some of the comments from Theo Epstein on the Athletic podcast last week, I think they're pretty mindful of that. And I think one of the things that they're going to be looking at is, you know, maybe longer roster limits or shorter rosters for pitchers, that they may be looking, you know, back at the pitch clock, which I think doesn't necessarily directly impact velocity, but I would not be surprised if guys, if they have to move a little bit quicker, don't have the same recovery time between pitches, in order for self-preservation, have to take a little bit of something off it. So I think those are things that probably lead to longer starts as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's, I mean, part of it, all of it is an evolution. Not all of it has to be rule change. You know, if you're Cleveland, you're going to run your starters out there a lot longer because they're really flipping good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think a lot of it has to do just differ on what the personnel you have is. The Rays have gone well away from the opener strategy the last couple of years because they were using it to try and win ball games because they felt like that was the best chance they had to win games. And it worked pretty well. Like, it broke Ryan Yarbrough in, who's now a pretty solid starter. So, like, there are some benefits to it, but I think I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see the natural order turn just a little bit here in the next couple of years.
Mike, great insight as always, man. We appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us.
Anytime. Good to be on with you guys. Take care.
Love Mike. Mike Farron's the best.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.